Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you? Good to talk with you again this week.
Good deal. It's another week during the off season, but still lots of stuff going on. I have what I think is a fun show for us planned because, Andy, we're going to do some rankings, okay? And, well, first of all, in any context, everybody loves rankings, okay?
They do. It's,
people love it. What's also fun about rankings is, you know, somewhere in this, we are going to disagree, okay? It's going to happen.
And this will be interesting.
That is always fun. So what we're going to do, at least the first half of the show, quarter one and quarter two, we are going to be ranking the coaches in the Big Ten. Then we're going to be ranking the quarterbacks in the Big Ten. So that's the plan for the first half of the show. What do you want to start with, coaches or quarterbacks, Andy?
Let's start with coaches. Let's see where we disagree. That way, when it comes to the quarterbacks, I'm more ready to take you down because I'm right and you're not. But the coaches will be interesting. I do have I think we'll see if we can disagree early. Let's just go there.
Okay. Well, we're going to start at the top. We're not going to do this bottom up. And Andy, we are not going to go through 1 through 18.
No.
Because I really don't care who the coach at Purdue is, and I don't care to rank them. So let's talk about the top coaches, then give ourselves a little time to hit on some random thoughts, because there are some interesting coaches beyond, say, the top five or so. But let's start at the very top. Andy, who do you have as your number one coach in the Big Ten?
Well, it has to be Ryan Day, right? Like record-wise, performance-wise, defending national champions, cleared the hump. It's interesting to me that, you know, I'm not a big fan of him. It's interesting to me that he lost both his OC, hello Chip Kelly, and his DC, Jim Knowlton, lost his DC to Penn State and offered him a ton of money. To me, that said something about sort of what it might be like to be a part of Ryan Day's coaching staff when you've got those kind of guys leaving after they win a national championship. Now, it could be job done, mission accomplished, I'm ready for something new. But he has to be at the top. A Big Ten record, overall record, stacking the field up, he's number one. Right. That was easy.
That's the easy one by default. But here's my question to you, Andy. I don't know if I've ever seen a coach so quickly change the narrative. After he lost to Michigan, if this were another year of college football without the expanded playoffs, he doesn't make the playoffs. God knows, he may have been in trouble for his job, okay, the way those Buckeye fans are.
Correct.
Where would you have ranked him at the end of the regular season when they lost to Michigan?
I still would have put him number one because I would have been like, okay, they lost to Michigan and they're not going to the Big Ten championship. But that wasn't what their focus was. That wasn't what they spent all the money on. That they had their eye on the right prize. All along, when you're watching Ohio State this regular season, you're like, what are you doing, Ryan Day? Get out of Chip Kelly's way. He's an offensive, brilliant offensive football mind, right? I'm watching game after game. It manifested itself in the Michigan game. I'm like, there is no way on God's green earth watching that football game that Chip Kelly is having an impact on how this offense is being coordinated, run, and asked to execute. There's just no way. There's just, I think after the Oregon loss, Ryan Day went back to, I need to take more institutional control because we can't lose any more football games. And he took it back over, and it just kept getting worse. I think for the college football playoffs, he handed the chip. I still would have had him first after that, Jimmy.
All right. Who you got number two then, Andy? This is where it starts to get interesting, because number one, I think you had to almost default to Ryan Day.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me, but I'm going to throw it back to you. Who do you have number two? Because I am curious about who you have, because I think we might differ.
I actually have not decided yet. I planned on reacting to you, be critical of whatever you decide, and go from there.
So I have, it was a toss-up for me. I have Dan Lanning 2 and James Franklin 3rd. Okay. And it was for both the same reasons. Neither program on the biggest of stages seems to be consistent, right? Like, okay, Oregon won the Big Ten championship. That was pretty much it. Dan Lanning's done a lot of good work there, but two losses to Washington. College football playoff loss this year, bad. Just, they got trucked. They weren't even competitive. So that was a bad look. I thought James did some of his best coaching at Penn State through the playoffs, through the Big Ten championship game. That was a heck of a football game. So it was those two for 2-3 for me. Right now, it's splitting one of our short ball guy hairs in between the two and the three. And I'm going to go Lanning 2, James Franklin 3 was where I went looking at it entering this season.
I think putting those two in a comparable level is fair, Andy. And I agree with you completely. It's tough to pick between the two. Dan Lanning, I think, has the advantage that he's fairly new at Oregon, but has been successful through three seasons there. His overall record is 35-6. Phenomenal record there at Oregon. Has yet to get over the top, though, yet. He had the issue losing to Washington twice last year. Didn't make the 14 playoff. Undefeated Big Ten season this year. Beat Ohio State. It was at home, but he did beat Ohio State. Beat Penn State in the conference championship. Some pretty big games. James Franklin has a longer track record at Penn State. I think sometimes James Franklin is given the shorter end of the stick. It's the can't win the big game.
But yeah, I knew you were going to go there. But yeah, it's valid, but it's not a crutch.
It dismisses everything else he's accomplished at Penn State. When he took over, they were in the middle of sanctions. They were essentially a 500 team program that he was taking over with a god-awful reputation, and you could debate that, you know, another time. It's another discussion. But to take them out of that, then in many ways, taking the Penn State community kicking and screaming into this new world of college football with NIL and everything else, the facilities. Who would have thought a few years ago or even a year ago they would have the highest paid coordinator in college football? Not necessarily the case. And I think also this past year, and again, everyone will say it doesn't mean anything till they win something. But his ability to get these players to return, Andy, and even if you want to say, hey, that's not him, that's the program paying these guys to come back, you know what?
Probably him.
He created the atmosphere for it. All right, who do you have number four, Andy?
Okay, here's where it gets interesting, Jimmy.
It does.
Would you have even considered Brett Bielema for number four?
Yes.
So did I, and that's where I put him. Did you know, Jimmy, that he has one more loss and three fewer wins than USC over the last three seasons? At Illinois. With a losing season. And with USC having an 11-win season in Lincoln Riley's first year, he has one more loss and three fewer wins than USC. I got Brett Bielema fourth. I think he navigated a tough first season, took his program to another level. His talent was cyclical, and they took a step back in 2023 and took another giant step forward in 2024. And he is attracting the kind of players he wants at Illinois and what he thinks he needs to do to win football games. I put him fourth.
I agree with you on this, Andy, and this is scaring me how much I'm agreeing with you and your analysis here.
That's because I'm smart.
That must be it, Andy. And you know what? With Bielema, he knows who he is. He knows what his program is. And that is so important. He's created an identity for himself as a coach. Yeah. And he carries that through with his program, knows what they are, and he excels at that. Might someone else come in and say, well, you know what? Illinois will never win a national championship playing this way. Well, you know what? Maybe they won't. Most teams aren't going to win national championships, Andy, but I feel like he is maximizing the program and the talent that he has. I think that's an exceptional choice for number four, Andy.
Thank you. Number five, I'm going to go – this one, I went back and forth. It's Kirk Cignetti from Indiana. You have to acknowledge what he did in one season, right? So, all right. And he had a track record. James Madison, before that, IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, Division II, PSAC Conference. I get it. But you have to acknowledge what he accomplished against a lackluster schedule. I know that. But still, that deserves – I'm looking for him to validate in 2025. But for right now, I have to acknowledge what he did, so I put him fit.
And I think that's another good pick, Andy, because is there another coach who has taken a team so far beyond their expectations than what Kirk Cignetti did? Again, he did it for 1 year only. And is that enough? Well, we do want to see him validate it. Andy, that is it for quarter number one. We're running out of time. We are going to do a little bit more coaching in segment number two. Stick around for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking, well, today we're talking about the Big Ten, Andy, and we're doing our rankings. We're ranking the coaches. You gave your top five coaches in the Big Ten. You went Ryan Day, Dan Lanning, James Franklin, Brett Bielema, Kirk Cignetti. I think an exceptional list. You did fantastic there, Andy. And I lied when we started. I said quarter two would start up with the quarterback ranking, but I'm not done with this coaching discussion, okay? There's so much more to talk about. Again, I don't want to go 1 to 18, but there are so many more guys to talk about, and I want to get your – yes. And, for example, you had mentioned Lincoln Riley's name. Now, he's not in your top five, but do you have a number six, or do you want me to just start firing questions at you about different coaches?
Start firing questions at me about different coaches, and I'll tell you where I put them and why.
All right, let's start with the aforementioned Lincoln Riley. Now, he came from Oklahoma. Andy, when USC got Lincoln Riley, I think that was considered a coup on their part. Exceptional hire. If you would have ranked the coaches 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever it was he came to town to USC, I'm betting a lot of people may have even put him at number one. I mean, he's coming off a great record at Oklahoma, offensive guru, quarterback guru. Andy, what happened?
They won 11 games the first year and then went over the side of a cliff, right? And they've never underperformed. They've underperformed pretty much across the board under Lincoln Riley. Recruiting hasn't been as smooth and as keen as he would like. The transfer portal has been hit and miss a little bit. He's sixth on my list, but he's fading. He's still a really good football mind and offensive coach. That doesn't change, Jimmy. But his performance at USC as the head coach, as compared to his performance before, subpar because it's below the expectations. Now, that's not saying they have to be an 11-win team every year, but the last 2 years, they were middle of the pack and struggling to be competitive and losing bad football games, right? Like losing games in a similar fashion time and time again. So, you know, he's on the hot seat. I do feel that. I think he's on the hot seat, but he's sixth on my list. Another one.
You had him number six, which personally I think is a little bit high and still based on reputation. He came over and I'll let you answer the question in a second. But one of the issues I'm going to wonder is that changeover from the Big 12 to the Big 10. How much difference does that make? But this was a guy going into the job at USC, big time national name, Andy, young, cool guy, offensive guru.
Quarterback.
He's now going to USC where there's the just filled with talent. He could just recruit in Southern California and he should be able to be a top five type recruiting class in the country. What happened, Andy? Why is he not?
Well, I think the biggest change in you're talking about the Big Ten in your first season, in the Pac-12, they could score 42 points a game, 44 points in a game, and still win more often than not. You can't play that kind of football in the Big Ten as deep as it is and be consistent. You just can't do it. Defense matters.
All right. I still got lots of names to get, and I always put these two guys together, Andy. They came in together, I think had similar reputations, and I think have both been relatively disappointing. That's Luke Fickell at Wisconsin, Matt Rhule at Nebraska, Andy.
Outside the top 10, both of them. Rhule at 11, Fickell at 12. I think Luke Fickell, based on pure results, why I ranked him 12 behind Rhule, they are linked together. You got it right. Luke has been, I think Wisconsin's performance under Luke has been slightly more disappointing than Matt Rhule's at Nebraska. Outside the top 10 for sure.
I lumped the two of them together, Andy. I don't see a difference. I think they've both been disappointing. They both, named guys. You'd think they would have success as Big Ten guys in the Midwest. They're at schools with pretty good reputations, histories, Wisconsin and Nebraska, just haven't seen it. Here's one that fascinates me, Andy. How about PJ Fleck at Minnesota?
Yeah, top 10 in my book. I had him at number 8, right behind. I gave Kirk Ferentz the common courtesy of a longevity ranking at 7, even though it slays me because it's, he kept his son way too long as an OC, and their offense still isn't any better. But they produce good NFL players, and they are kind of who they are. I have PJ at 8. It just seems to me that Who does more with less in the Big Ten? Is it Brett? I don't know. I think Brett's getting more. I think when you go across a five-year window and roll it over, go back to 2020 and start there, and then, you know, 19 and roll it over in 5 years, like, who does more with less? And I think my answer is PJ Fleck. He's been there almost a decade, Jimmy. And they're relevant. They're hard to beat. You kind of don't want to play them, but there's a formula you can use to beat them. It's hard to beat them at their own game, and they're not a pushover. So I think nobody gets more with less than him. That's my stance. And he's a top 10 coach for me.
I think, Andy, that doing the job at Minnesota that he has done is very impressive. Yep. I think the unfortunate thing is it possible that he's coached Minnesota to the Minnesota ceiling? And we'll never find out what PJ Fleck could do at a school with a higher ceiling. You know,
when the coaches' openings come around, I'm always fascinated that he's not an inclusive name in conversations, right? Like, what about is there must be something that is there must be a gap of something that we don't know about, because I'm like, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's like that seems like and I haven't heard anything the contrary or know anything. What that would be a guy I would want my son to play for, right? Like PJ's one of those guys. James is one of those guys. Who would you want your son to play for? I'd want my son to play for James. I would want my son to play for PJ Fleck. Just out of cause. So he's one of those guys. I'm not sure why he doesn't get more next level looks, but maybe it's because maybe he has a ceiling that we don't know about. But I still think he's a fantastic coach, and I like watching his team play.
Andy, I think the issue that he has, and this goes on throughout the whole, you know, coaching world, is there's always the hot coach after every season. Someone who takes, you know, Kurt Cignetti, what happened at Indiana last year, you know, there were conversations that if he wanted to move, he probably could have gotten a high profile job because he was the shiny new toy. Maybe there was a time when PJ Fleck first came to Minnesota, had 9 or 10 wins. Okay, still the shiny new toy. He will never be that shiny new object anymore, Andy. And I don't think that's fair. It's reality, but right. I don't think it's fair, because I will always wonder what could he do, you know, if he would have gotten the USC job instead of Lincoln Riley, or gotten the Oregon job instead of Dan Lanning, you know, that kind of thing, or the Michigan job after Jim Harbaugh. We'll never find that out, but I'm with you. I think he's a pretty good coach. The other coach, you mentioned Kirk Ferentz, who he's at Iowa. Again, he probably deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award.
That's what I give him.
For what he's done through the years, bringing teams to Iowa that, you know, probably maxing out what you would expect from them. What's your take on him?
Yeah, I think he's comfortable at Iowa. Like, it fits him, you know what I mean? And I think Iowans and fans of the Iowa Hawkeyes football team are happy with what might seem like to success to them, but is really just kind of football mediocrity. I am impressed by their player development and the guys they send to the league. That's outstanding. That is next level stuff that they do there at Iowa, but they can never put the two pieces together, whether it's they have a little bit of offense, but they can't sort of win a game with their defense on the line. And more lately, more often than not, the last 3-4 years, it's been they simply can't score any points, and their defense is outstanding. So they can't put it together to be a true threat. You know what I mean? They can win a big game every now and then, but they're not a true threat. And that's you know, the big game wins sort of put lipstick on a little bit of a pig. They're not a true threat. They're not a threat. They might win a big game, but not a threat.
I think they've for years taken advantage of the big being in the Big Ten West, cream of a poor crop. He gets right. his 8 or 9 wins. All right, Andy, we got a minute left. Dealer's choice. Is there any other coach you want to highlight?
Yeah, I think Sherrone Moore at number 9. I put him at number 9 for Michigan. I think this is his put up or shut up year, right? Their roster was ravaged. He kind of is in the mold of Jim Harbaugh, but you can't win football games with that model in the modern game unless you're Jim Harbaugh, right? Like, there's a certain way he does it that is exceptional, different than most. So he has to catch up. Like, Sherrone would want to run the ball 27 times a game to 35 times a game every week. He has to adjust as the head coach. He beat Ohio State last year because Ohio State played a game right into his hands. Their defense was still good. They have to figure out how to be more relevant offensively if they're going to stay there under his leadership. That was all I had. That's my one guy that I put in. Was Sherrone at 9.
Very good, Andy. We ended up needing 2 segments to go over the coaches, but that's okay. We'll get the quarterbacks in quarter 4, but next, your questions, and we ask Andy. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. We all know what that means. It's time to ask Andy. We are going to take your questions for Andy. And if you want to send in a question, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Andy button, and away you go. Andy, I see you got your pen and pad ready because you like to take notes. Who asked what question? You ready to roll?
I am. That means I'm ready.
All right. Let's give it a go. Let's start with Carl in Williamsport, who says, Andy, can you give us your analysis of James Franklin as a head coach, especially today where there was so much more to the job than X's and O's? I thought this was a well-timed question from Carl since we were reviewing coaches, Andy.
So we were talking about the coaches in segment 1. I had Lanning and Franklin kind of 2-3. It was a splitting hairs between them. I was going to bring up another point, but we ran out of time. So thank you, Carl and Williamsport, for giving me the platform. As a CEO of a college football, a modern era in the transfer portal, in the NIL era, and the way he builds the bones of a team as a CEO and leader, James Franklin is miles better than Dan Lanning right now at that. As a pure football guy, football coach, I'd say that Lanning's probably a little bit better. So my analysis is, as a CEO and leader, and what it's matriculating to as a head coach, Chip Kelly said it best. He's like, I don't coach anymore. That's why I left UCLA. I just want to coach. You don't do as nearly as much of that anymore. There's a lot more top level stuff. He's good at it. He's consistent. He's relational, which I think gets lost. And he's relational with families and parents and his players. Think of it. How many players, you know, you don't hear a lot of players who have struggled in establishing a relationship with James. As a CEO in the modern era, aka now Penn State is the all-in team for 2025. He's a visionary, but he's a process-driven guy. That's a wicked good combination for a leader at the top. He's always prepared. He's got lists. He's got contingency plans for contingency plan A, contingency plan B, contingency plan C. He's always thinking like that. He is hiring coaches. I like the hires he's making and the way he's sort of handing more of the coaching to them. He's going with some young lettermen that have put themselves in. The CEO job that it is now, I think he's always been a good recruiter, blah, 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 blah. That none of that has changed. And it seemed to me through the course of this season, after they lost to Ohio State, that sort of next six-game stretch through the college football playoffs in the regular season, that is the single best stretch of coaching James Franklin's ever done at Penn State. It's not just a one-game wonder, even though they lost to Notre Dame. I think you're going to get that at the next level all through 2025. That's another reason why I think Penn State's the all-in team. The talent, and I think he's sort of, in the modern game, found the niche of how to make this work for him.
Andy, you gave a very good, fully fleshed out answer and analysis of James Franklin as a coach. The only sticking point I have, and maybe this is me being a little overly sensitive, I think for so many years being referred to as a CEO, as a coach, is damning with faint praise. It's typically followed with exactly what you said, which, oh, not necessarily an X's and O's guy. I think that's being unfair to James Franklin. I do, because I think he's, with that said, I think he is a tremendous CEO and a tremendous leader of the program. Okay. And I phrase it that way, Andy, because of the things he has had to go through at Penn State. When he first got here, it was still dealing with the sanctions and everything with that. Then as you're going to this modern age of transfer portal and NIL, not only having to navigate that like every other coach, but also at Penn State where the goals are so high, yet those new things like NIL are not embraced here. Because Penn State went for so many years with Joe Paterno, where they won on a budget, okay?
Right.
And it would be hard for anybody to do that today. All right, let's move on. I'll tell you what, I want to throw this out there. When our buddy Jimmy from Forest City sends us questions, Andy, he sends like three at a time, and he sent several last week, and I didn't get to one of them that, because it's a food question, I want to throw it out there. Andy and Jim.
Yes.
I liked your analogy between the wide receiver room and mystery meat. You provided examples of Salisbury steak and Spam. I was hoping to hear Scrapple included. What's your opinion of Scrapple?
It's, for me, it's at the same level as like liver and onions. No. You know, HE double hockey sticks. No. Yeah, no. I've tried it. I've tried hot sauce, spicy mustard to try. And no, I can usually pretty much get almost anything down with hot sauce on it. Scrapple for me is a hard no. I just can't. I've tried. No.
You know, Andy, today I'm just finding myself agreeing with you so many times. And it's scrap. If the only way you could eat something is by smothering it with something else to cover the taste of it. I'm also glad that you mentioned liver and onions, which is the one thing that just – there was a client that years ago, it was a military base. They had their own dining room where they had wonderful cooks there. Every day was fantastic, but once a week there'd be liver and onions. No, just can't have it. And by the way, Andy, I already know your feelings about Scrapple, but if you want to feel even stronger about it, look it up, what it is.
No, don't need to.
Pig snouts and pieces of the no, exactly right. All right, let's move on.
Let's move on. Yeah, let's get out of there.
Scrap a question, Jimmy, but no, a hard no there. Larry from Hanover says, "We saw Saquon Barkley lead the Eagles to a Super Bowl title. Was this the sign that running backs are back in vogue in the NFL? And is that a trend we'll see in the college game as well? I'm looking at you, Nick and Katron."
Well, I think the quarterback pretty much showed his worth, Jalen Hurts for the Eagles. Saquon was the piece that unlocked the next level of the Eagles offense. It took some time. Saquon, ever since he was a middle school kid, right? Like, I think he got his, he got his first college offer when he was like a JV freshman football kid. He is always at, no matter what level he's played at, he's always been a generational talent. And he showed that at every level, except with the New York Football Giants at the NFL level. It took a trade for him to go, or not trade up. He signed a contract and moved. New York was like, "Oh, we're not going to pay you." And the Eagles were like, "Yeah, we'll give you $2 million more, sure." That opened up and allowed him to show that at every level, he is a generational talent. Generational talents are the exception to the rule. I do not think that Saquon Barkley, despite getting a contract here, I think it was yesterday they announced that they signed him, and he's the highest paid running back in NFL history, as he should be, because he's a generational talent. I don't think it changes the game, and I don't think it changes how the college game operates either. It is two horses in the stable are always better, despite a generational talent. You're in the long run, over the course of a long haul, I still think two is better than one, and I think NFL teams and college teams are going to continue to operate under that auspice. That it, if you want to be special, you got to have two of them.
Andy, I don't think, well, Larry was looking so much, you know, two versus one. I think he was looking about, you know, how, where the emphasis of the offense goes. And I think in both the college game and the professional game, it's always changing. It's, you know, someone's successful one way, everybody follows that cycle for a while, then it changes. And I think those of us who were, and I refer to my conversations with Chris Buchanani, who's on our show, also an Eagles fan like myself. When we first found out that the Eagles signed Saquon Barkley, we were both thrilled because we knew what this guy's capable of. We also knew the difference in the offensive line between the Giants and the Eagles. Right. Yeah. I do think there will be a little bit of a – I think a guy like Ashton Gentry is going to be picked higher this year than he would have been a couple years ago, because I think that mindset in the NFL, which was you don't invest in a running back that highly. You just don't do that. And I think also, you know, would Penn State, and we saw, you mentioned how you thought James Franklin's coaching those last four or five games this past season was his best work ever at Penn State. And guess what? They really shifted to leaned on their running game to do it. And we also saw, by the way, Notre Dame getting to the, you know, national championship game, very much leaning on the running game. Now, just to show you the difference, and I think you could, Ohio State, who had tremendous running backs, it's when they decide, you know what, though? That's not who we are. We've got the best wide receiver in the country. Let's go use them. And that's when they really excelled.
Correct. It's where, what is your best asset with how you were built? Ohio State had two tremendous running backs, but they weren't built to run the football down your throat, right? They were compromised up front. I just think Barkley's the 60-40 rule. Everyone talks about the running game. 40% of why Saquon Barkley is great is everything else without him running with the football in his hands. It's his blocking. It's his block recognition. It's his ability to catch the ball and impact out of the backfield and be in the open field in an open space. It's a 60-40 rule. He's a great running back, but he does so much else well.
Andy, in my opinion, he was the best player in the NFL last season. All right. That is it for quarter three. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
All right, one more. Just to let you know about the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I didn't really rank them. Any ranking you want to do starts and stops with Drew Aller at the top. Because when you look at the quarterbacks, you're like, all right, there's only like five or six of them that were with their team last year, right? Like, and then a couple guys moved up and claimed spots late in the year, so they're going to be returning, right? Like, and then you have a whole bunch of new dudes, right?
It's more conversational, more important than the rankings. But anyway, you ready to roll?
I am ready. Yeah.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. Andy, we spent more time than we expected on the coaches ranking in the Big Ten. We used up both quarter number one and two. That means we push back our ranking of the quarterbacks. We're going to do that now. And Andy, between segments, you said it. If you're going to talk about ranking quarterbacks in the Big Ten, this is essentially starts and ends with what you think of Drew Aller.
Yeah, he's number one on any list and every list that you start the rankings with. With the quarterback position overall across the board in the Big Ten, talent-wise, yeah, does he have some stuff he needs to be better at? Yeah, late in games and in big games, he needs to be better. But over the course of two full seasons starting, and it's just – It all is start and stop with Drew Aller. So Drew Aller's one, no matter how you view it. There's not a sound, solid argument to put anybody else at number one ever. It all kind of it's after that. And look, the quarterback position's free agency. There's transfer portal, so it comes in all different shapes and sizes at this position now. I think there's only, a handful of guys who were their starting quarterbacks for their team last year. Then you've got a couple guys who moved up as backups, right? Like they were the backups to start the year. Then late in the year, they took over as a starter. And now they're the, you know, settled guy who has a clear path to being QB1 going into 2025. And then you got a whole bunch of new dudes, transfers, change of schools, whether it's from the FCS level, you have one, you've got one that's going Big Ten school to Big Ten school. So you've got all kinds of different things to look at. But for me, it starts and stops with Drew Aller. He's number one. Number two on my list, this one might surprise you. It's Indiana's quarterback. Fernando Mendoza came from Cal. I think this kid's a good quarterback. I think Kirk Cignetti showed that he'll build an offense around a good quarterback. I thought this kid was outstanding for Cal last year. I'm interested to see that.
Andy, you know, and you're scaring me today because I just find myself agreeing with you time and time again, and it's scaring me a bit. Before we get to your number two, let's start with number one and Drew Aller. I do want to say, first of all, among the top teams in the Big Ten, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Drew Aller is the only returning starter. Right. If you look at the bigger picture, the national picture, it's pretty much the same way. You know, throw in Notre Dame, throw in Georgia, throw in Alabama, throw in Texas. They are going to a new quarterback. Now, there was once a time years ago when I would look at college football, you know, looking forward to the next season, I'd look at the top teams and I look who has a returning quarterback. I think they have an absolute distinct advantage.
That's changed.
Yes, it's changed quite a bit. We've seen, you know, got a Will Howard go to Ohio State, a Bo Nix go to Oregon, a Dillon Gabriel going to Oregon. Over and over again, we're seeing these players moving, and they're experienced quarterbacks. So the point is kind of still there, having the experienced quarterback. So, but the combination of the experienced quarterback with the potential of Drew Aller and the team around him like he has at Penn State, everything just points at Drew Aller. But with that said, he could be the best quarterback in the Big Ten going into the season, and it's still not enough. He's still got to up his game, and you mentioned a couple things. Now, for your second pick, Andy, I love this pick.
Yeah, I love this kid. I think he's going to fly at Indiana because they're going to open up some windows for him.
You and I were looking. I sent you an article that I found. I think it was from an Oregon site where they did their rankings, and I used it just for reference. So we knew every name, and oh, yeah, that's who's there. And they ranked this kid way, way further down the list, and I didn't understand it. He put up really great numbers at Cal. Here at Indiana, he's got a coach that I think is building an offense that's built for this kind of kid to succeed. I'm with you on that. Andy, now there's, before we get to kind of the newbies, the young studs, and there's several of those coming into the Big Ten, I do want to ask you about Dylan Riola, the quarterback who came into Nebraska last year, did get the start as a true freshman. We saw a couple flashes. I'm really curious your take on him.
So I think he's a top five returning quarterback. I had him in my top five. He was a true freshman playing quarterback. And at times he looked like the recruit that you think he is. And at times he looked more like a kid in over his head. Right. Like, I don't think it was an unequal balance. I think there was a little bit of both, and it was a mixed bag. But how could you expect it to be anything but, especially for a program in the middle? Right. Like, it's not like they're an elite program and he's a true freshman. They were clearly in the middle. He brought higher expectations to 2024 for Nebraska. And he also, that he was partly responsible for that. And he was also partly responsible for them continuing to mire in a little bit of mediocrity, right? Like, he was at both ends of the spectrum. So he feels like he's on the Drew Aller path to me. Like, he's going to be better. He will improve. I need him to win a game they shouldn't. Right. I'm still kind of waiting for Drew to do that.
Be the difference maker. Now, you know, one could argue, you know, that USC game with the comeback late, that one I would put on Drew Aller. Andy, let me ask you about.
Good point.
The teams that are supposed to win, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, they all have young guys. Now, Oregon, Dante Moore, he has starting time at UCLA, so there's some experience there. Yeah. Julian saying this is his second year in the program after coming over from Alabama, but still a youngster. Michigan has the true freshman in Bryce Underwood, the all-world being paid a bazillion dollars to go to Michigan. Tell me about that group.
Yeah, so I think when you start with, for me at Oregon, Dan Lanning's put a really rock solid blueprint in place with transfer quarterbacks. And why would you expect more to be any different? It's just expect success out of Oregon at the quarterback position. Ohio State, I know young, been in the program. When's the last time Ohio State, you could even say, was even average at the quarterback position, right? Like, they they stockpile that position like cordwood, and they transfer everywhere, and they go in and out, and you know, go back and start with Joe Burrow, right? Like, just go back from there and move forward with how it's a revolving door, but they never seem to lack what they need at that position, right? Michigan, same thing. What do I think and know and rank it? I don't know. The quarterback play at Michigan was like so atrocious last year. I think it's darn near impossible to be that bad again. And this kid has talent. None of those guys had real talent. So that's the way I look at it. I expect Oregon to have the most success of anybody transitioning at the quarterback position because they know exactly what it's familiar to them. I said, expect success in Oregon. If Ohio State's going to struggle at the quarterback position, we're all going to be surprised because it's just not part of their MO, and Michigan, it can't be any worse.
Well, you know, to go through them, I'll start with Michigan, and Bryce Underwood, you know, considered the number one quarterback in the country, quarterback recruit coming in. And I expect them to hand the keys over to him. But I expect to see a little bit like Dylan Riola from Nebraska a year ago. We'll see flashes and maybe a better team around him at Michigan. But he's going to be allowed to have some growing pains there, and it's okay. Yep. At Oregon and Ohio State, expectations will be higher. And
sky high.
Yeah, you've got in Ohio State the help of the best receiver in the country. They also brought in the transfer portal a very good tight end. We know that. We know he's going to be surrounded by talent, and we also know if things don't work with this quarterback, they have two other high four-star quarterbacks waiting right in the wings. So, but I'm with you on, you know, Dante Moore, I think, has the good combination of he has some experience starting.
Correct.
He's got the program in Oregon, the coaching with Dan Lanning. The talent is going to be put in around him. The fact that, as you pointed out, they've gone the Bo Nix, Dylan Gabriel transfer portal success. So they have the model. And this kid maybe didn't have the same success elsewhere as the others, but he also has the 1 year already in the system. So I think that's a ticket for success there. Andy, I don't know if you have any other quarterbacks you want to mention.
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead. Go for it.
I want to give you my he's a returning quarterback. He's one to keep an eye on that I think could be a difference maker for a team and a program, and that's Aiden Childs at Michigan State. You saw enough last year in a complete rebuild, right? Like, if he takes a step or two forward, Michigan State will take a step or two forward with him, maybe three or four. That's a kid to keep an eye on at the quarterback position from going from to be an impact player at the next level. I really think that's the one that's a dark horse for me, that keep an eye on the kid from Michigan State. He could carry that team.
That's the final word. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.